Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
gamble.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook, NFL Week 15 recap show. Encourage all of you to go download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up using the promo code BETTHEBOARD, take advantage of all those new customer offers. Regulations do apply. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider. Payne, how are you this fine Monday, my friend?
Not too bad. How's everything your way?
No complaints. And finally, after what felt like a little bit of a losing skid for us here in terms of best bets, we were able to put some hockey term hay in the barn with a couple of futures coming home, a pair of best bet winners. So it felt good to get back in the win column this past Saturday and Sunday.
Hay in the barn. I like that. Is that a popular phrase?
It is amongst hockey circles, and I won't claim to know the origin of it. I believe it's got to be coming from the Canadian prairies. But at the same time, it was what my junior coach used and college coach. Every time you pick up a point towards the playoff chase, it was always putting hay in the barn. I've never been a farmer, though, so I'm not quite sure what it means.
Interesting. I'll have to write that down and look it up after the show.
Yeah, talk to your contacts. I know you're well connected to the NHL.
Hay in the barn. Hay in the barn. Okay.
So, see, there we go. Futures. Good deal there. The Buffalo Bills win the AFC East. A couple of win totals that we thought were in real good shape finally become official. And of course, you know, credit to us. You know, we don't like to pat ourselves in the back a ton, but going Patriots first half angle really paid dividends.
In and out, baby. In and out. We got work left to do, though. Work left to do. We got some, we're down the home stretch. We got week 16, 17, the playoffs, but we do have a fighting chance for another winning season, which is what we're looking for.
That is indeed the name of the game. And when you look at some of the stuff, as we always do on Monday, we start with the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have to, in my opinion, start in the AFC East, where we officially experience the changing of the guard. We mentioned the Buffalo Bills. They go on the road and absolutely embarrass the Denver Broncos in what a lot of people thought could be a flat spot, myself included. Win that game 48-19, finally take home a division crown for the first time in 25 years. But they weren't the only team in that division making headlines. They had the assistance of the Miami Dolphins, who put the nail in the Patriots' playoff coffin as well yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, there was a changing of the guard. Let's see what New England does this offseason. That'll be an interesting one to monitor if they go out and get themselves a different quarterback. And certainly guys on the defensive side will be back after opting out. And you add a couple weapons, suddenly that division is really strong again. Fortunately, it looks like, unless Jacksonville does something really stupid and wins a couple football games, Trevor Lawrence is not going to be in that division. Would have been really interesting seeing Trevor and Tua and Josh Allen in that division for the next 15 years. Anyways.
I mean, if you're the Jets, though. Yeah, no, if you're the Jets now and you probably don't have a chance to get Trevor Lawrence, you're drafting number two. Are you trading down or are you drafting Justin Fields, given what we've seen, you know, during this portion of the college football season?
We'll see what Joe Douglas does. I think he'll evaluate his options. There's a couple other quarterbacks there as well, but maybe you do go full-blown rebuild, move back, and make this a real long-term plan. Because if you don't have a quarterback or you think you're just going to kind of get by with Sam Darnold, you're probably going to be drafting pretty early again. Maybe that's the route they go. I don't know. Let's see what they think of Justin Fields. Certainly, he hasn't looked the best down the stretch. I don't know. Let's see what Joe Douglas does. I'm not quite sure the path that they'll take at this point. I think they'll evaluate it, and if they have a franchise quarterback or one that they deem, they're going to take him. If not, then they'll try to trade down.
Oh, it's definitely interesting knowing that clearly with the tiebreaker, that Jacksonville would be the odds-on favorite to select Trevor Lawrence. But
yes.
With the Dolphins, Bills, Dolphins, go ahead, whichever direction you choose to go.
I mean, we can touch on them both. I mean, this isn't really surprising for Buffalo. I know we like their coaching staff, and I think we have always thought pretty highly of McDermott. And then all of a sudden he was cognizant that the offense needed a little bit of a punch. And he went out and hired Brian Daboll. And I know a lot of people in football are fond of Daboll. Casual fans are probably starting to get to know who he is. I think if you are looking at him and not knowing his background, this is a guy with 5 Super Bowl rings and a national championship. So he's been there, done that. When he goes out and hands his resume off this offseason, when he takes his job interviews, the first two guys as references are going to be Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. So this isn't a shock to me. It's not a big surprise that Daboll has transformed this offense. Now, he has shown an ability to adapt and adjust. He has come full circle with analytics. And if you Google his name this morning, there's like 3 articles in the last 11 hours. Apparently everyone wants him, right? Like the Chargers, Atlanta, the Jaguars, they're all looking at him. But with this game Saturday, and I know you and I went back and forth a bunch on this, I would say, based upon folks that I talked to, this was one of the bigger positions of the season on the Broncos. And I just didn't understand it. And I certainly wasn't going to fade Daboll again. But what was really interesting to me and would put it over the top if you were an organization looking at hiring either him or Joe Brady, you would go back to how they both played Denver. And it's really interesting to me, if you dig in here, Denver, what they've done the last month defensively, once they got decimated with injuries in the secondary, Vic Fangio is basically playing with light boxes. He's daring you to run right now. He's played with 6-man boxes, and he's dropping 5 guys at the highest rate in the league recently. So even Joe Brady kind of got sucked in and conned into running the ball with his backup running back. But Daboll didn't do that. Daboll was like, I understand what they're trying to do here. And the secondary, even though they're playing more guys back there, absolutely stinks with all these injuries and suspensions. So Daboll went 67% pass in the first half. He went 65% pass the first 3 quarters. Josh Allen was successful in 56% of his passes the first 3 quarters. 8.3 an attempt, 5 explosives. When Daboll did run it, he ran in these optimal situations, which is like second and short. Just looking at a bunch of like the analytics stuff, I know everyone had this idea, right? Second and one or second and short, you can do anything you want, and you see a lot of teams just launching it deep. That's the down you should be trying to acquire the first down. Then you get back to first down and you do whatever you like to do at that point. But he was situationally smart when he chose to run it, and then a little flamboyant there going Statue of Liberty up a couple of scores.
That was a bold move, Cotton, I'll tell you that much. A little salt in the wounds. I was disappointed, though, that it got called back because of a hold.
It did get called back for a hold, but that was his stamp in front of a national audience. That was good to see. In terms of the Dolphins, what do we think there? I mean,
I think for a team that gets shut out in the first half, they put together that monumental march before Tua gets intercepted, much to the delight of all of our listeners and ourselves included. The Patriots get bailed out with Cam's stupidity, fumbling all along the sidelines. Thankfully, Christian Wilkins is 350 pounds and has a giant foot and groin that kept that football out of bounds. But to Miami's credit, they score 22 points in the second half. They run the football for 250 yards. They beat the Patriots at what the Patriots want to do. And that's something that, you know, we weren't sure how they were going to handle this, knowing that the Dolphins were going to be without a couple of their most important contributors on the offensive side.
Bullied the bully is exactly what they did. It wasn't a pretty game. It was never going to be. Right? It was 2 teams that knew each other inside and out. A lot of guys on the staffs that know each other know exactly what they like to do. It's why we saw that total get hammered under first half and full. 2 teams that really just lack weapons on the outside. And, you know, after the top 3 pass catchers for the Dolphins all went out and their starting running back, the only way Miami was going to win the game was to just try to run the ball, I guess, and bully New England. Now, Miami had spent resources this offseason, if you remember, on the offensive line. They added 2 pieces in free agency. They went out and drafted 3 rookies that are all contributing. So it's an improved Dolphins offensive line, but still below average. They've gone from basically the league's worst offensive line to a below average unit, which is a pretty big stride in one offseason. But if you look, 74% of Miami's runs graded successful. 6 yards a carry, 6 explosives, 3 rushing touchdowns. Selvin Ahmed, and you probably are familiar with that name, went to Washington. He was an undrafted rookie. He was on the Dolphins practice squad earlier this season.
He was Miles Gaskin's backup in Seattle, and somehow he's still his backup in the NFL. So credit to him for going out there and seizing the opportunity with the injury to Gaskin.
Yes, and then there was a Matthew Breida sighting. He finally contributed. So,
yeah, that was probably more the corpse of Matthew Breida exhumed from the grave, because I'm convinced he doesn't actually exist these days.
Yeah, it's a lot tougher running behind, you know, not the best offensive line versus Kyle Shanahan's exotic ground game with a good offensive line. It is a little different. So, you know, listen, this is a very interesting Dolphins team. They're still not there. Like, they're still not, I mean, I think they're close, but, you know, they're not making a Super Bowl run here. This is the second youngest team in the NFL. There's still holes on the roster. And I think that'll be an interesting offseason for that organization, right? I mean, you probably need to go out and get a true right tackle. You probably need a bell cow back. You need an offensive weapon that can take the top off of defense. There isn't that game breaker there. The one guy that runs really fast can't catch, and Jakeem Grant.
Featherstone, so, baby, for all those folks that love the movie Necessary Roughness.
Yes, I think we'll see where he is taken. We'll see where the Dolphins are selecting. They do have multiple picks in the first round, but they're talking about reuniting Tua and Smith. So that would be a decent deep threat there. But, you know, there's other weapons that they need. They're a little weak up the middle still on defense. You need a run-stuffing defensive tackle. You need an every-down middle linebacker, and you need probably a safety. So they're still a couple pieces away, but the thing that you're seeing here for the Dolphins is Brian Flores has completely changed the culture. Players have bought in. Miami's disciplined. They're playing hard. There's a real, you know, attention to detail. I think it's interesting to see what Miami will look like with another offseason.
Yeah, it's full buy-in and culture. I think you hit the key points, and we've talked about it all the time. Sometimes the results don't translate until you ultimately have the talent on an NFL football field, but you see the difference, you see the energy, you see the effort. And Miami, if you'd have told them that they could be 9-5, controlling their own destiny going into the final 2 weeks of the regular season in terms of getting to the playoffs, I think Brian Flores and the rest of the organization would have run over men, women, and children to make that happen. One last thing, shout out to Bills Mafia, too. We know how loyal they are. Pretty incredible scenes, Payne. I'm not sure if you saw the Instagram footage. Josh Allen and the Bills get home about 1:30 Eastern time, and it's standing room only around the airport welcoming the team back after they win the division title.
I did see Stefon Diggs trying to drive through that traffic in his $400,000 car, just kind of just cruising. Love it.
Yeah, someone. What kind of car is Diggs driving? Because if it's a sports car, someone should explain to him, this is the time of year, if you live in Western New York, you put that thing in the garage and you spend the money on the range to try and drive through the snow and ice.
I'm nearly certain it... I don't know. Was it a Bugatti? I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah, probably not the best for cold weather. Cold weather traction up
there in Western New York. He's a speed receiver who can do it all. You got to have a flashy car.
I'm not saying not to have a flashy car. There's a time and a place to drive it. Driving it during December on frozen roads probably isn't going to leave Bills fans feeling warm and tingly when they need him out there on the field healthy. But
what's not feeling warm and tingly is there was a suggestion that the Dolphins should have drafted him years ago, and there was injury questions, if you remember, and he fell to the 5th round.
Is he, when you look at him...
One for the good guy over here.
Yeah, I know we're going off on a little bit of a tangent. I mean, is he one of the top 3 receivers right now in the league, in your opinion, given what he's done in terms of route running and everything else?
Yeah, and it's really interesting to watch him run some of these routes. I mean, he's got this lull concept where it looks like he just isn't involved in the play. He's a deep threat. He's a short threat. He's got run after the catch ability. We had said last year, and I know Justin Jefferson came on bigger and better than anybody thought he could. And Thielen got all the credit, and Diggs was kind of the guy that was yelling at Kirk Cousins a bunch, but he was responsible for almost 40% of the Vikings' air yards last season. It was incredible. So he's really changed this way, and my understanding is he has been an absolute thrill to deal with. Very smart is what I'm hearing. That's the one thing, all these Bills players, especially on offense, they like love each other. They get along. Brian Daboll and Josh Allen are like best of friends. Very, very smart. And the one element that we kind of discussed in the Pittsburgh breakdown there that Sunday night was which of these teams is going to be able to adapt or adjust. And we saw in that game, that Buffalo was that team. They were able to get the final drive before half, came out of the half, made the adjustments. There was some understanding there that, like, hey, some of these plays that these guys were running kind of were changed mid-game. They were just kind of creating plays on the fly, and they were smart enough to handle that between Diggs and Beasley and Dawson Knox, who, remember in our preseason podcast, was, hey, like, look out for Dawson Knox. Now, with John Brown down, they're playing Dawson Knox a little bit more. Hopefully he's not removed from the equation when John Brown returns, because I think Dawson Knox has the potential to be one of the better pass-catching tight ends in football. But there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of weapons, but very smart team offensively as well.
There's no doubt, and a worthy division champ now playing with a little bit of luck and work their way up to the two spot in the AFC playoff picture. A tale of two halves, Payne, that we saw between Tampa and Atlanta. The Bucs, 68 yards of offense, down 17-0 at the break, and suddenly this team explodes coming out after halftime, scoring 31 points on five straight drives, four touchdowns and one field goal. I can't figure out what to make of this Bucs offense. Are they good? Are they average? Are they inconsistent? Or there do you think they maybe found something?
They don't know what they want to be still. And if you
probably remember, not a good sign after 14 weeks.
There is this battle. And if you remember the headlines during the bye, it was that Brady and Arians were going to have a little golf outing and spend a few days together to get it figured out. And I guess the NFL nixed that. I got to tell you, if I'm wanting to meet with my head coach, I'm probably not getting league approval to hang out with my coach. That seems bizarre. But
a little virtual golf, a little golden tee, you're good.
But to your point, in this game, first 30 minutes, it looked like Raheem Morris had the perfect game plan and that he was going to get some revenge against the team that fired him. Matt Ryan was moving the ball through the air without Julio, which if you look at those splits, typically doesn't bode very well. Defensively, Morris had the right scheme. In the first half, Atlanta outgained Tampa by more than 200 yards. They were a net positive 4 yards per play. Net positive 17% in success rate. I'm looking at Tom Brady come off the field drive after drive. He looks defeated. I mean, he had a look on his face that you rarely ever see. Somehow they went into the half, regrouped. In the second half, it was a combination of better coach, better quarterback, making some of the necessary adjustments, along with, you know, what Atlanta typically does, and that's blow games and blow leads late in the second half. Tampa outgained Atlanta by almost 250 yards. Net positive 4.2 yards per play in the second half. Net positive 17% success rate in the second half. Tom Brady woke up. He didn't look defeated. I guess it was one of those things where you go into the halftime, you're like, okay, Tom, like, what's going on here? Let's figure this out. Let's kind of at least put on the right face here, because the body language wasn't overly good in the first half either. And Brady figured it out. Tampa averaged 10.4 yards per pass in the second half. Brady was successful in 57% of his second half throws, five explosives, including the touchdown to his buddy and roommate, I believe still, Antonio Brown. If Tampa had lost that, they're only one game up on Chicago with two to play at that point. So things could have got a little dicey had they lost there.
Yeah, and Chicago would have had the tiebreaker. And what kind of lasting image would that have provided for the NFL if Tampa's on the outside looking in because of a game they lost to the Bears and all you see is Brady holding up four fingers?
Yep. And it's Maserati Mitch leading Chicago to the promised land.
You know what? And I sent you the tweet earlier and I was blown away. And of course, we say win-loss is all relative, obviously, in a football context. But I believe it was Paul Papps that sent out the tweet that said through the first 48 games, Aaron Rodgers, 28-20, Deshaun Watson, 28-20, and Maserati Mitch, baby, 28-20, potentially leading the Bears back to the playoffs.
Allen Robinson looks a little bit healthier, looks a little bit happier as well. He is suddenly not asking to be out. There was a quote said he loves Chicago and would love to be in the city for life. So tune has changed a little bit there. I don't know. Laser has figured some things out offensively, it would appear. Now, they've also played some defenses that aren't very good.
But there we go. And how much better does the offense look when you can actually establish David Montgomery on the ground and not make your quarterback do absolutely everything if you're going to move the football?
Yeah, they're getting the ground game going a little bit. Mooney is like a rocket out there. So there's some weapons. Cole Kmet finally getting more snaps than Jimmy Graham, which probably should have happened Week one. So it's starting to come together, right? They've bought in a little bit. They're happier. They're feeling good. They're playing with house money at this point. If they get into the playoffs, awesome. Mitch Trubisky's playing with some confidence. Still has the brain fart, right? You're up three, driving for points. I don't know where he threw that ball in the back of the end zone. So you still have those swings and misses, and it still needs to be an offense that is manufactured for Mitch. But the element of his legs really provides an element to their offense that they didn't have before with Nick Foles, much needed. So right now they're playing well. Big favorite here against Jacksonville. So let's see how this plays out. I mean, they're playing with house money at this point. Fun
and
to watch.
There's a very good chance that they could have a chance to draw their hated division rivals week 17 with Green Bay having nothing to play for, which would be an interesting storyline in and of itself. I only had one other thing written down in the positive manner, Payne, but before we get to that, I wasn't sure what you wanted to hit on, and if we happen to kill two birds with one stone there, it makes my job that much easier.
I don't know what you had planned, but Jets, is that what you're looking at?
I was just going to mention, well, the Jets was one I was going to mention, but it was more the Cleveland Browns with their performance on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, it's, listen, Cleveland is buttoned up right now. Stefanski has them organized. They have good game plans. They fully bought in. All of the things that we were hearing in the offseason have come to fruition. And they came out focused, obviously, despite playing in, a war on Monday night against Baltimore where they come up short. The ground game wasn't as good as it usually was either, and that was a little bit to be expected. The Giants' run defense has been their strength for most of the season. But you got Baker Mayfield in a groove, and Stefanski took advantage against a defense that we've talked about that likes to play a little soft in coverage, bend but don't break, and then they were also without James Bradbury, their best corner. And then you got good Baker, and you could tell it was going to be a good night because from the onset where he was putting the ball was in some tough spots. And even that touchdown to Jarvis in the back of the end zone, it's like, hey, let's just up the difficulty here. When I have a wide open David Njoku, I'm just going to fit this ball in one only spot that it can be placed. And sure enough, he did. Baker's completion percentage, 17% better than expectation. Second best mark of the week so far. The Browns defense wasn't great down to down, but they held tough. They clamped down in the red zone. A couple odd decisions from the Giants. I mean, I'm all for being aggressive, but I think I'd throw out the punter throwing over the middle in traffic in a condensed area to my 300-pound center out the window, but that's just me.
Freddie was trying to put his stamp on the game, Payne. He wanted to have that lasting visual because he wasn't sure when he was going to get a chance to call plays again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big Colt McCoy fan, but I'm probably choosing him over my, my punter, my kicker, whatever the heck that was. Very weird.
Yeah, you do wonder how much differently that game plays out if the Giants come away with more than 3 points on three early red zone trips. They go into the half and really had no chance in the second half to make that a football game. But credit to Cleveland, they get to 10 wins. Baker nearly delivered his third straight 300-yard game, and when he plays with confidence, that arm strength and the zip he put on the ball was definitely a sight to see. As far as the bad was concerned, Payne, I'm not sure who
Are
you want to eviscerate.
Are we not talking about the Jets? You're not going to give the Jets any credit?
Oh, yeah, I'll give the Jets. They get 12 seconds.
You
won
the
game that you didn't. You won the game that you shouldn't have wanted to win if you're the Jets. Congratulations, winning outright as an 11-point underdog. You were the largest underdog winner since the 1990s. And credit to the Jets. I believe the stat I saw this morning, there have been six underdogs that have won outright in this point range. The Jets represent three of those, including obviously their big win in Super Bowl III over the Baltimore Colts. Well, that's a tremendous statistic. It just tells you how bad the Jets have been that they've been this large an underdog so many damn times.
Correct. Now, I understand Jets fans went to bed pissed off last night. No longer in pole position, obviously, for Trevor Lawrence. And what was good to see here is a lot of people had claimed the Jets were tanking. And now it's pretty obvious that Greg Williams just had the wrong defensive alignment out there. That's bottom line. And I've said this multiple times. Adam Gase is gone. So he doesn't care about helping his replacement and making him look better by having Trevor Lawrence, right? A lot of Sam Darnold's destiny will be dictated on who the Jets draft. If they go Trevor Lawrence, Sam's as good as gone. So Gase and Darnold aren't laying down here. There's no reason for them to. The impressive part is the Jets didn't even stay on the West Coast. Adam Gase came out this week and was like, hey, I'm not going to have my guys sitting in an insane asylum for a week. We're not just going to hang out in our hotel room. So they flew back home after the Seattle game. So that's pretty interesting. I thought the Jets did a good job muddying this thing up. Adam Gase, for all his shortcomings and his unwillingness to adjust and adapt the offense, he's got one heck of a script. I don't know if you're paying attention to this, but the Jets have scored on the opening drive 8 straight games now.
They've been very good on the opening drive. That's why anyone who's trying to bet against them should just wait, get a live opportunity after the Jets get a field goal or a touchdown out of the gates.
So somehow they churned out enough offense here and just held on. Frank Bush is the Jets defensive coordinator in the interim. Did a really good job, I thought. The Rams offensively in the first half were horrible. 3.2 yards per play, 20% success rate for Sean McVay's offense in the first half. So kudos to the Jets. They won that game. Good for them. Good for Adam Gase. Good for Sam Darnold. And again, neither of those guys care about getting Trevor Lawrence.
No. We talk about it all the time, and I think that's what gets lost for the casual fan. Organizations can want a tank to try and set themselves up for the future and the longevity, but the players out there on the field, whether it's the NBA, with the NHL, the NFL, or anything else, the film doesn't lie. These guys are fighting to try and keep their jobs. They're going to give you everything they possibly have, every single snap that's out there, and credit to the players for not having to endure a winless season, because we know the physical and emotional and mental toll it takes, knowing how close they were to beating the Raiders, that they were finally able to get over the hump. And, you know, to a certain extent, throw a wrench in the Rams' playoff plans, which suddenly now, if the Rams were to lose next week in Seattle, all of a sudden not a shoo-in to get to the playoffs like most of us assumed.
Absolutely. And you want to know what's so funny is you hit that right on the head. There was a conversation this week, and I believe it was in the media, but Sean McVay calls Adam Gase. And Adam says, what the hell is this guy doing up? It's 4:15 on the West Coast. And Sean called him to say, hey, I've been watching the film. You guys have not quit. You guys are playing your balls off. And so everything that you just said there is 100% factual. And Sean Gase called Adam, or Jesus Christ, Sean McVay called Adam Gase and praised him for it this week. So that's really interesting. Now, what's funny about this is, you had a quote from McVay after the game yesterday. He said, hey, we'll see what this means for our team, right? We're either going to realize that we can't just go out there and win games, and this is going to be the turning point for our season, or we're going to basically fall and collapse. I think it's probably the former. I think this is a wake-up call. I can tell you a lot of pro bettors were gravitating towards Rams Super Bowl futures over the last 10 or so days, grabbing 13-1 and before that game kicked off against the Jets, we were down to 10-1. So maybe interesting to explore that now if the market overreacts to this Jets loss.
Yeah, I think I saw some 18 this morning. 18 yep. And 20, I want to say.
Yep. So potentially a decent thing to maybe just grab, because when you look stylistically, I know everyone said, well, you can't have this West Coast team potentially going to Lambeau Field. But on paper, if you forget the cold, not a bad matchup there, I wouldn't think, because you're going to have Jalen Ramsey potentially removing Adams from that game, and suddenly things look a little bit different. And with Cam Akers, you can now run the ball. And my understanding here is, informationally, Whitworth is going to make his way back this season. So you would get your left tackle back as well. So
would
that's
be a key cog.
Yeah.
Key cog there for sure.
Yeah. So already, we're seeing Rams money enter this market. 3 on Sunday night against Seattle. We're now down to 2, soft 2.5, even some 1.5 some places. So professional bettors already kind of getting out ahead of the market this early in the week on the Rams taking the points.
Well, when we go from good to bad and transition that way and even stay within the same division, both of these teams won their games. Seattle goes on the road, beats Washington 20-15. They build a 20-3 lead, and their offense kind of craters over the last quarter plus portion of the game. And then the Arizona Cardinals have to withstand 2 Hail Mary attempts from Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles. They escape at home 33-26. But Payne, I'm not quite sure which of these two teams you want to eviscerate first. Seattle and the conservative nature that's pretty much overrun everything they're doing, or the ineptitude of the Arizona Cardinals to be buttoned up, eliminate the mistakes, and realize, hey, this team's actually pretty talented if they don't do stupid shit.
So, quickly addressing Seattle. Listen, we talked about it last week when we broke down the Seattle-Washington game. They've changed who they are. We have told you forever, Schottenheimer, at his core, is like this run-first guy. Just how he was brought up with his father. His father liked to run the ball. Pete is a defensive guy, likes to run the football. So they went back to who they were because they saw Russell Wilson turn the ball over a little bit too much, and then Chris Carson returned. So they are super conservative. They are running the ball more than ever. It's not for me, but they got super conservative. Now they're asking Russ to pass a little bit more in these known passing situations. And as good as he is, that's going to hinder any quarterback. And we saw it late in that game against Washington. Has a ball tipped, gets picked off, and all of a sudden we have a game. Ken Norton Jr., conservative in nature with his play calling as well. You allow Haskins to get in form, into rhythm. Once you're up 20-3, you basically go into this prevent defense, and I get it. Keep everything in front. Don't get beat deep. But, I mean, guys are just wide open 7-8 yards in the middle of the field. And suddenly Haskins gains his confidence. The defense gets a stop. And you know, if you've done any research, Washington is one of the best second-half teams in the NFL. So the game wasn't over at 13-3 at halftime. Washington has been able to make adjustments defensively with Jack Del Rio and offensively with Scott Turner. It's been one of the best teams making adjustments all season. So I don't know why you thought going conservative because you're up 10 on the road was the way to go. In terms of Arizona, no one's going to really look at this as being the case because not only do they win, but they cover. But there are organizations that are buttoned up and fundamentally sound. And in these pressure situations and type games, they're going to play smart. Arizona is not there yet. It is all flash and talent right now. And again, no one's going to look at this, I don't think. No one's going to take a second look and be like, hey, you know, Arizona didn't play overly well here. To me, I looked at that.
We watched the whole damn game. Anyone who thinks they played well, despite what the scoreline says, is only kidding themselves.
Kyler played the worst game I've seen for a guy to throw for 400 and get a win. Early in that game, there's a fumble inside the five, and he gets bailed out because there's a fumble by Kyler the play before, which is a clear fumble, but they don't review it. Arizona, just completely aloof, is like, hey, even though we fumbled, we're not going to like quickly get to the line of scrimmage and hike it so no one can challenge this thing. No, they let it drain down to 4 seconds, and the Eagles didn't throw the challenge flag. But the very next play, the gambling gods made up for it because Hopkins fumbles inside the five. And then up 12 with about 8 minutes to go before half, Kyler fumbles again when the momentum of that game is totally in their favor. Defensively, the Eagles' first touchdown, my God, I mean, it's a total breakdown. It's 3rd and 20 from the 32-yard line. The Eagles throw a pass behind the line of scrimmage to the short side of the field, kind of just looking to make it an easier field goal, and somehow Arizona gives up a touchdown. They lost the edge. I don't know how you lose the edge on a play behind the line of scrimmage to the short side of the field, but it happened.
They didn't only lose the edge. The receiver didn't get touched. It's not like he broke tackles or had a Marshawn Lynch beast mode run. Dude did not get touched. It looked like there were Arizona defenders falling down everywhere.
And then before the half, you're only up 6 at this point because you've thrown up all of yourself. The Eagles are getting it out of the break. You should be looking to add points. Cliff doesn't know he only has one timeout left. He thinks he has two. So he runs back-to-back plays. Arizona gets to midfield, has a penalty, which drained 10 seconds off the clock. And so you don't get points before the half, despite going down to the Eagles' 11-yard line. And then up 6 with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, you're looking for that momentum touchdown, go up, you know, 2 scores heading to the fourth. And without pressure, Kyler attempts to throw the ball over the middle, which is a task in and of itself for him. Throws a knuckleball. I don't know if that got tipped. I looked.
No, it didn't get. I watched it tipped. 4 times. Didn't get tipped.
It was like a tumbling torpedo into the end zone, and it went about 7 yards. He was looking to throw like this dime to the back of the end zone. It must have came out of his hand wrong, but this thing is just tumbling into the air, and it gets picked off in the end zone. And then the Eagles go down and tie it at 26. Cardinals get the ball back. They move it. And then there's a 3rd and 1 on the Eagles 32, and you're like, okay, they're going to see some momentum here, get another score, kind of take over the game late. come away with 0 points when you get to the Eagles' 32-yard line because you pitched the ball behind the line of scrimmage from shotgun on third and an inch, and you lose multiple yards, and then you go for it on fourth down, which is the correct decision because you also have a backup kicker. Kyler throws the ball 10 yards over a wide-open receiver's head on fourth down. Arizona could have won and covered that game 10 times before they ultimately did. They're just not buttoned up right now. Now, again, there's a lot of talent. It's just not an overly buttoned up team, a team that doesn't have anybody that's really won much, right? Like, who's the leader of that team right now?
I'd have to go through their entire defense. Yeah. I think that's probably where it comes from, because if you look at the skill position players offensively, nobody has been associated with a winner at any stop along the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sure isn't their head coach, I'll tell you that much. Right. And so you're looking for Kyler to be that, leader. You're looking for Hopkins to step up and be that vocal leader. It's a big win, and it was the sharp side. So, you got the cover. Congrats to those guys. The second half line was quite telling, right? You build these second half lines based on the model, and all the statistics and all the stats from the first half was like, yeah, Arizona's the right side here. But you're thinking to yourself, it's like, man, they're going to continue to throw up on themselves. But that was a strong second half line. They were up 6 at the break, open minus 1, so larger than the full game number as well, right?
Yep, that's exactly where it was. And the only reason that Arizona's able to get a push there is because the Eagles actually miss an extra point with a chance to take a lead 27-26. And you mentioned Kyler Murray's interception. Okay, the ball gets out of his hand. The bigger travesty was Arizona on 3rd and 29, giving up 23 yards on, again, another bubble screen designed to just pick up a few yards. Philadelphia converts on a 4th and 6. They go down the field, score a touchdown, and they gave some of that momentum back because they didn't take what would have been their first lead of the game at 27-26. But either way, the game within the game, I think both of us took away a lot of the same things as we watched that one, trying to figure out if Philadelphia was going to make a late season push or anything else. Credit, though, to Jalen Hurts. I think that his level of athleticism gives them a wrinkle that they didn't have with Carson Wentz, and it seems, despite having inferior skill position talent, other than maybe running back, the team has responded and given them a little bit of a puncher's chance. We'll see what they bring to the table on Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys in a de facto elimination game in the NFC East. Last but not least, Payne, it wouldn't be a Monday morning podcast if you didn't take at least one shot at Anthony Lynn for his play calling with Justin Herbert. So much success for the Chargers throughout the course of the first half, and then you watch them through the latter portion of the third, throughout the fourth. They do everything they can to try and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Do you remember the first two possessions?
Run, 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 run some more.
A lot of runs on first down, the first possession. 5 runs on first down that totaled 4 yards. And they go down and score a touchdown because Justin Herbert is bailing the team out on 2nd and long and 3rd and long. And the one thing that we had said in that breakdown is like, we're not sure what's going on with this offense. But as soon as Austin Eckler came back, it's become this run first offense that does nothing but check the ball down. So pretty wild to watch one unfolded there. Now you have a couple, Austin Eckler goes down a little bit and all of a sudden you start pushing the ball down the field in the middle portion of that game. Justin Herbert was on absolute fire. But to your point, late, they get a little conservative again, something that we saw in the Denver game when they blew the big lead there. So it's tough to watch. Right. They don't do anything right. They don't do anything smart. They don't put their players in position to succeed. And Anthony Lynn is probably, hopefully loses his job. I know he's beloved there by ownership and the GM, but he's got to go. I mean, did you hear the press conference afterwards? They're like, hey,
I didn't even subject myself to it.
Like, what were you thinking there when you iced your own kicker? And he said, it's a good thing you asked. I was hoping you did. What? So he said, well, we just wanted to get a little bit more organized on special teams. So, okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's how he handled icing his own kicker, I guess. But, listen, early on in that game was exactly how we broke it down. It was like, hey, it's going to be, a lot of runs on first down. And it was in that first quarter, going back to the first quarter. 6 rushing plays in the first quarter for the Chargers, 0.5 yard average, 17% success rate on first quarter runs. It was successful in the first quarter. Those were the passes, 8 of them for 12.1 a pass, 88% success rate.
You mean throwing against the Raiders defense that had second stringers throughout the secondary and no pass rush wasn't going to be a plus EV situation for them? I had no idea.
It's weird that you can go into that game, and I get it's a short week, but it's a familiar opponent. The Raiders can't stop pass to begin with, and now they are without Arnett. They're without Heath, so I believe they're on their third string safety. And it was like, hey, we're gonna run the ball. We're gonna run the ball here. That's what Anthony Lynn's got to do. We kind of talked about this, right? Like, even throughout the course of the season, there's been these little hints within the media. It's like, hey, we got to get the ground game going. We got to get the ground game going. It's just who he wants to be. He's a former running back. So it's just not going to be conducive for success for Justin Herbert. He's got to get out of Dodge there.
Yeah, great in theory. We'll see what direction the Chargers go. But all right. Good, the bad, and the ugly as eloquently as you can do it. And Payne, you're well over your quota in terms of today's time limit on the show, so I know you're going to be a little disappointed.
I'll let you ask me follow-up questions. That was nice.
Means we're going to have to run through everything in the next 6 minutes. Look-ahead lines and overall market adjustments, of course. These are some of the look-ahead prices available at FanDuel Sportsbook and where the market was to where the market has gone. The Arizona Cardinals were a 3-point favorite playing host to the San Francisco 49ers. That number has ballooned out to -4.
I zoned out there. I think you asked me about the Cardinals game. I don't know what just happened, but my mind went to the screen as I'm watching it move this morning. Cardinals is what you asked me about?
Yeah, Cardinals 49ers, number up a full point from where it was before, despite the 49ers catching a ton of steam against the Dallas Cowboys yesterday.
It's Monday morning. The interesting part about that steam was not it just getting 2-3, which I understood because the matchup wasn't very good for Dallas, but it got to 3, and then you saw more Sunday morning steam. Apparently, folks believe Zeke Elliott in his current form is more than a point better than Pollard in his current form, which is an odd belief to have. I don't see it. Anyways, this line to me, it's a little funky. It initially feels pretty short, but I don't really love the Cardinals. One thing that I'm going to have to dig into here, and I don't know quite yet, but hopefully I will know here by the end of the day, is what are the plans for the San Francisco 49ers? Because Kyle Shanahan came out flat out, emphatically said, we're celebrating Christmas with our families. So I don't know if that entails them going home or if they're going to fly those folks into Arizona. That would certainly change this handicap a little bit if San Francisco decided to just say, F it, go home, hang out with the family for the holidays, and then come back. So I kind of need to dig into that to have a better idea of this line.
Interesting dynamic in play there, no doubt. And when you talk about celebrating holidays at home, the Raiders, of course, will see a change in starting quarterback. Marcus Mariota will fill in for Derek Carr. This was a game where the Raiders were -2.5 on the look-ahead number at FanDuel Sportsbook. Now we see the Miami Dolphins as a 2.5-point road favorite here.
Yes, obviously there is a downgrade to Mariota from Carr, and I get that Mariota looked very good. And what's really funny, this dynamic that we have, if you're a casual fan watching that game Thursday night, you are probably thinking, once Derek Carr goes down, ah, crap, this game is over. In my mind, as a professional bettor, the first thought in my head is, motherfucker, we now have a completely different style quarterback in which Anthony Lynn on a short week did not prepare for. And sure enough, Mariota just goes up and down the field, the read option. You have to play Mariota completely different than Derek Carr, right? The read options play, you have ends that like to crash down and get pressure on the quarterback. That's never going to work against Mariota. You have to stay stound on the outside. And Mariota went up and down the field. I personally don't believe, and I was listening to some local media there, and we're like, they're already making claims that Mariota might have to be the starting quarterback moving forward. And I'm thinking to myself, you think Anthony Lynn on short rest prepared for that?
Good indication of what you're going to get from Marcus every game.
Yeah. So, listen, I think Marcus Mariota is one of the best backup quarterbacks in the NFL. I think there's probably a couple teams that he could start for. And I believe that he has some attributes and talent that if he could figure out some of his deficiencies and improve upon those, he could be a middling quarterback in the NFL. But my guess would be Brian Flores is going to have a little bit better of a game plan this week than Anthony Lynn had last week. So that's interesting to me. And then you also have the other dynamic. I get that mathematically, the Raiders are still in it. And if this got to three, there might be an appetite for the Raiders. But realistically, they're not making the playoffs because they're going to need Baltimore to lose twice. And if you look at Baltimore's schedule, it's going to be a double-digit favorite at home this week, and then you get the Bengals on the road. They're not losing. So this, to me, is an interesting one. We already know about the internal strife going on there with, you know, the coaching situation, especially on the defensive side of the ball. We touched on that last week. Now, all of a sudden, you have a team at home playing the day after Christmas. So that'll be interesting to see how that gets navigated.
Yeah, definitely interesting dynamic. So much of it this time of year isn't as much about numbers as it is about matchups and motivation and everything else that goes into trying to formulating what will ultimately make an investment. Speaking of which, we saw the Bears number completely balloon. Bears on your look-ahead number were a 3.5-point favorite for their trip down to Florida to take on the Jags. Now with the Bears on the heels of back-to-back wins 2 weeks ago against the Texans, this past week against the Minnesota Vikings, both as underdogs, more than a touchdown favorite, as that number's ballooned out to 7.5 at FanDuel.
It'll be interesting to see where that line goes. Certainly the perception of the Bears has changed big time in the last few weeks. Jacksonville feels like they're playing out the string. Now, I know they're a lot of energy and effort. They haven't given up on the season. I want to dig into this a little bit more. I mean, the matchup doesn't feel like it's great either. But we'll see. I mean, that's a big number. Big number.
That it definitely is. And a number that you can understand why it trended up as well. Monday Night Football, Buffalo, 4.5 on the look-ahead number, now out to a 6.5-point favorite of FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yes. Obviously, Buffalo, red hot right now. Battling through games in which professional bettors don't think much of them. So this is pretty interesting. I don't know what New England's going to do here. Now, they obviously played them tough in Buffalo. And if you can get Harris back, that would go a long way because I think the Buffalo Bills can still be beaten on the ground and you can muddy this thing up a little bit. Certainly not running to lay it with Buffalo, but I think we have to wonder, or we should at least find out here in the coming weeks, of what New England truly thinks of Cam Newton. The lip service has been great. Everything that Bill Belichick has said about Cam Newton has painted him in the brightest of lights, and there's probably a reason for that. I'm sure he's been on his best behavior. He knows this is a job interview, but also you don't want to come off like you miss Tom Brady, obviously. But I think we'll find out if Cam is the future of this organization, because if he's not, you have to give Stidham these last few games, don't you? And then you go and make a play for... Yeah, and then you go and make a play for Matthew Stafford. And if you can nab Stafford, pick up a couple other pieces in free agency and through the draft offensively, and you get some of the guys back that opted out defensively, all of a sudden you're right back in the picture next year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think New England is that far away from going from missing the playoffs this year to being very much in the thick of things. Now, we're not obviously putting them on the same level as the Kansas City Chiefs, or their trajectory doesn't seem as bright as the Buffalo Bills, but there's no reason to believe that this can't go back to being a perennial playoff team. If you can get a veteran quarterback, you get a weapon or two, you get all the defense back intact, and suddenly we're talking about New England flirting with 10 wins again in 2021.
Yep, exactly. So I'll be interested to see how New England handles this game. I mean, I'm not putting it out there, but you would think you'll know, is Cam your guy or not? If you start him here, it probably does a disservice long term if he isn't your guy next year. So we'll see what comes of this.
It has definitely been a tough watch, to say the least, when you look at Cam and you see how he's trying to operate out there without weapons, and the accuracy just isn't quite there. But to New England's credit, they at least had a game plan early on, short controlled passing that seemed to pay dividends. Ultimately, their defense unraveled, as we talked about earlier in the show, and it was the Miami Dolphins getting there actually as a short home underdog when that number ultimately shifted. If you've never tried FanDuel Sportsbook, what are you waiting for? Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started and be sure to sign up with the promo code BETTHEBOARD so they know we sent you there. Bowl games kick off in earnest later today. You'll need plenty of distraction to get you away from the family during this holiday season. FanDuel has all sorts of wagering options, not just for bowl games, but the NBA tipping off in earnest on Tuesday night. We'll have the NHL right around the corner, and most importantly, the NHL playoffs along with the college football playoff. So be sure to download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Use the promo code BETTHEBOARD, FanDuelSportsbook.com/BETTHEBOARD. And Payne, the reason that we could ramble on earlier in the show is because we wanted to spend maybe about 90 seconds on the garbage that we're going to see tonight between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals. And the Steelers are 14.5-point favorites at FanDuel Sportsbook. Total on the game, 40.5, although we have seen a touch of over money, it appears, on this game earlier today. When you look at the Steelers, this is a team that's failed to score 20 points in three straight games since 1980, Payne. There have only been two road favorites of 11-plus points that come into a game off back-to-back losses. Ironically enough, both came against Josh Rosen, once when he was with Arizona, once when he was the starting quarterback in Miami. When you look at the Steelers, they've topped 50 rushing yards just twice in their past seven games. The Steelers lead the league in drop passes with 37. And the overarching question, are the Steelers afraid to throw deep? I'm not sure they have to do much of anything, though, because they're matched up against Ryan Finley tonight.
Ultimately, every game has a price, and I'm not sure we're there yet.
Give me 17.5 and I'm in on the Bengals.
So I think we kind of grazed over this maybe in discussion of the Rams on Thursday, but at 12.5, despite the low total and the thought process of can't lay that many points with a low total, that went out the window. And Pittsburgh minus 12 was very sharp. And I get that typically they play to the level of their competition, which could happen here. But they finally have not just normal rest, but a little extra rest, which I think is good for Big Ben. You have a chance to regroup. We know the matchup is absolutely horrific, and we don't have to go into those too far, but we saw the matchup unfold once already this season. And so you're going to have Ryan Finley attempt to operate an offense that doesn't have a ground game behind an offensive line that has trouble protecting against one of the best pass rushes in the NFL. And the way that you have to beat Pittsburgh is by bullying the bully, punching them in the mouth, attacking the attacker. You have to be able to throw intermediate and deep on Pittsburgh's defense. That's how you beat them. And all of a sudden, Joe Hayden returns this evening from his concussion. So you're looking right now at a Bengals offense that has three offensive touchdowns the last 14 quarters since Joe Burrow left with the knee injury. One of them is in garbage time with 2 minutes left in the game. The other one is against Miami. It's a three-yard out that has a bust coverage, and it's run after the catch from Tyler Boyd. There's really only been one touchdown on a manufactured drive that wasn't a bust or a garbage time touchdown in the last 14 quarters from this offense. And that was with Brandon Allen, which the market obviously feels is an upgrade over Finley. I don't know what happened to Ryan Finley, Todd. Like, he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks at NC State. Played against competition better than the players he had in his team. He had a good preseason. He is not an NFL quarterback.
I don't know if it's the velocity. He never had a strong throwing arm at NC State. It was more getting by with accuracy, and maybe that's part of it, but there's no doubt when he had a fill in that Washington game, when we had a small piece of going over the total, you watch three snaps, you go, this thing's dead and buried.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, you didn't get out to the hot start after Burrow got stopped at the one and you had three kicks at the post. So that one was dead and buried. I don't know what to make of this game. So it's not at a number that I'm looking to dive into. And sure, you can look at your numbers, and it's a vital part, right? Price is ultimately the number one factor. Well, when you start to add the price with the matchup, is this a game where Pittsburgh's just going to, like, go out and score constantly? I mean, I'm sure the I'm sure the Bengals defense will put up a fight here. But eventually, and we talk about this all the time, the defense is going to wear down. That's the biggest thing. Is how does Cincinnati, like, a good drive for Cincinnati is picking up a few downs, a few first downs, and punting it back, not turning it over. But there are going to be some short fields here. And throwing the ball short is not going to work on Pittsburgh. And I think we had this same thought process and philosophy when we broke down that early week Washington game against Pittsburgh. You cannot throw the ball short on these guys. And Washington tried throwing short in the first half. Lucked into 3 points right before break, but that was it. Then all of a sudden, Scott Turner opened things up in the second half, pushed the ball downfield, and they had some success. You have to be able to push the ball downfield against the Steelers. It's the only way that you can beat them. You're not going to beat them dinking and dunking and try to running the ball. Just not going to work. So I think eventually what ends up happening here is, like, Finley's going to be overwhelmed. They're not going to be able to move the ball. They're going to lose the field position battle. And an offense that we don't think is humming right now will eventually have some short fields here. And so the price kind of becomes negated a little bit.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You wonder if this is a game that if you like the underdog, there's a chance that you're going to get a better number live than you can necessarily pre-kick. And it's always encouraged to take advantage of some of those options you have at your disposal. And I think what's interesting, Payne, we talk about trends all the time, and some are more meaningful than others. Some you don't have a significant sample size. But I think some of these are fun for our listeners out there. As you guys can tell, we don't have a strong position on the game whatsoever in terms of even being able to steer you in one direction or another. Ben is a double-digit favorite in his career, 12-23-1 against the spread. As a double-digit road favorite, 2-11 against the number. Did cover the last time he was in this role, though, as a 12.5, 13-point favorite against Jacksonville, a game the Steelers won 27-3. The Steelers, they're now 29-8-1 to the under on the road the last five seasons. When you look at how they performed against the Bengals, 7-2 against the spread the last nine meetings, 4-0-1 under in the last five. And the Bengals, in the last 10 games between these two teams, have only been a double-digit dog one time. And they caught 14 back on December 30th in 2018, lost that game 16-13. So a number of things to consider when you look at this: a level of familiarity, a divisional game, two offenses that are really struggling, but one defense that still is top five in the NFL can add a variety of variances to this particular game, as you mentioned, Payne, creating short fields. And even the Steelers' offense, as inept as they've been lately with drop passes and whatnot, can probably poke it in from a 27-yard drive out. Just ask the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, this, you know, again, this hasn't been the ideal spot for Pittsburgh, right? You know, on the road has not been ideal, and there's a pretty strong trend towards the under with Steelers games on the road. But again, as you alluded to, there was a touch of over money this morning, very small at 40.
So
I think when you look at this, right, just kind of going back, you had some quotes from Tomlin, and it basically, he said this morning that fatigue makes quitters out of all of us. So we will see how the team responds to that. Obviously, getting the extra rest helps. If I were forced to place a bet on this game, it would be the Bengals team total under 13.5. That's if I had to, like, degen out for this one. but that I mean, I just, again, at 12.5, Pittsburgh was the sharp side here. There is some 14. I just don't know where this potentially ends. Like, I don't know where the buy point is for Cincinnati. Obviously, division game, national TV, which, you know, the Bengals probably shouldn't be on in the first place, but here we are. They're not going to, like, no show. They're not going to no show, but eventually I do think that the defense wears down here.
I mean, this game, let's not kid ourselves, would have been a heck of a lot more intriguing if we had a healthy Joe Burrow out there. Yes. Much tougher to flex Monday night football games than it is anything else. So for the fine folks at ESPN that have to produce this game, they can only hope that Steelers Nation turns out in droves and a confidence builder as they head into a pivotal game week 16 against the Indianapolis Colts. All right, Payne, I think we've done enough damage. We've exceeded the time allotment that you allocated for the show this morning. I appreciate it, and so do our listeners, for you being so gracious, giving us an extra 20-plus minutes.
I set the over-under for 39.5 minutes pre-intro-outro, so it would have put us at about like 41.5. But yes, we are pushing past an hour, I think, here with the intro-outro now.
Let's be honest here. Going over 39.5 minutes before this show started would have been game of the year, 50,000 star parlay type territory that we could have ensured, because I can filibuster with the best of them, much to your chagrin.
Yes, you can filibuster, and you like to, you know, ask not just a follow-up question, but a follow to the follow-up. And I mean, I could have just went in here would want answers, but then you got me talking about a couple of my guys trying to get Brian Daboll hired here. So hopefully he gets a head coaching job. We just like to talk about Brian Daboll.
I got you. I was going to say, I think I got 12 minutes out of the Dolphins and Brian Daboll early on the show. If we back that out, then we're barely over that 40-minute threshold.
There we go. There we go. So back on, I'm not sure when we're coming back. We have to figure that out, but I would say sometime well before Thursday morning, you will have a podcast to listen to breaking down NFL week 16. Is it going to be? Yes. So whether is normal time Wednesday or maybe overnight Wednesday, we still got to navigate that situation, but it'll be well before Thursday morning.
People might want you to try and do the podcast on Christmas Eve with a couple eggnogs in you as you break down on some of these games. So they have a fresh podcast in time for the Vikings and Saints on Christmas Day waiting under their tree.
There is some good games. I don't think we're going to have a problem finding games in the NFL this week. There are some nice matchups.
Plenty of good things down the road. And like always, you can follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. We'll let you know the recording schedule. But just sign up for the podcast. Go to your favorite podcast platform, whether it's iTunes, whether it's I don't even know where the hell
we are.
It's
not called Spotify, iTunes anymore. Stitcher, it's called Apple Podcasts, Todd. It's called Apple Podcasts. iTunes is a thing of the past. I know you haven't upgraded the iPhone 6, but
I think that's what I have. I might have the iPhone 4.
I listen.
Well, you probably should. I don't say a lot of important things most of the time.
So maybe for you're transitioning, so you're celebrating both. But for the holidays, maybe a new phone in the works.
That's an interesting way to put it. I'm transitioning. I think that's going to send the wrong
picture
visuals.
There the other day, and there was a Christmas tree in the living room. I said, "Whoa!"
I do have a small Christmas tree in the living room alongside the menorah.
Yep.
We'll have the parents making the trip up. My mom. I can't tell anybody how old she is. Her birthday is actually on Christmas. So even growing up in a Jewish household, not celebrating the holiday, Christmas was always important because you had to make sure mom had her gifts to keep her happy.
There you go. What's the food of choice? Always Chinese food Christmas Day?
You know, normally, growing up in Chicago, it was always Chinese food on Christmas Eve because there was nothing else open. But there was a Carson's Ribs was the name of the restaurant we would go to. You get the double baked potatoes, you get a little rack of ribs, garbage salad. That was always the spot we went to on Christmas because you had so few options to try and take advantage of. So mom got to pick the movie, and that's typically where we would go as a family for our holiday.
I like it. So it's a good move.
But times, they are changing, my friend. That is for sure. Follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Make sure to download the FanDuel Sportsbook app just in time for the holidays. Use the promo code BETTHEBOARD. That way, they'll know we sent you. Best of luck with whichever way you choose to wager on Monday Night Football or any of these bowl games before we reconvene. And hopefully, we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.